We don't pick up with the Jewish home, and we're up to the fourth chapter, the seventh Mishnah. And we had seen the beginning of the Mishnah where Rabbi Yishmael, the son of Rabbi Yossi, said that if someone can avoid going to court, he is avoiding enmity, thievery, false testimony, false vows. And we discussed that often in life you could win the case but lose the relationship. And that a person has to take into account that it's not only a question of who's right and who's wrong. Rabbi Yishmael continues and teaches us in the end of Mishnah Zayin, V'agas libo be'ora'a, someone who is crass when it comes to teaching, to giving halachic ruling, he doesn't bother to understand the finer points, to understand the details, he just gives a ruling even though he doesn't really understand what's going on yet. Shote, he is a fool. Rasha, he is wicked. V'gas ruach, and his spirit is crass. So, the simple understanding is that a person who is going to give a ruling without really understanding what's going on before him, he's a fool because he doesn't appreciate how he's harming himself. What kind of thing is that? He's going to give ruling without knowing what the halacha is, without verifying, without knowing. In heaven, they're going to take him to task over that. He's cruel because he's not taking into account that what he's saying is going to affect someone else. And he better know what's really going on. And his spirit is crass, so he's not really going to understand. He's missing everything. He doesn't even realize what he's doing to himself and to others and what a price there is going to be to pay. Now, in life, we often have to decide. You know, a kid walks in and he has blood gushing down from his forehead and you say, "What happened?" And he says, "The neighbor's kid hit me with a rock." And you go out there and you're ready to beat the daylights out of the neighbor's kid. Maybe he hit the neighbor's kid with a rock first. Maybe you have to know more what went on. Kid comes home and he says, "The teacher locked me in the room for 3 hours. You're ready to call the principal and give him a piece of your mind. Maybe your kid was throwing chairs at glass windows. Maybe he was doing harmful things, and when they asked him to calm down, he refused, and then they tried and they begged, and then they reached a point where they had no choice, and they had to keep him there, and they said, if you'll only apologize and start behaving, you could come back to class, and he refused for 3 hours until he finally gave in. There's always more to the story, and a wise parent and a wise spouse is slow to react. That was the first tip they taught us in Pirkei Avos. Hevu mitunim badin, be slow to coming to a conclusion. And so a person has to always take his time in every instance. Very often guys come to me with halachic questions, and very often I don't want to answer, especially when it's between one person and another person. Chazal said, hear both people out. The pasuk says, every person presents the case from their perspective. One of the difficult things is sometimes one spouse wants to go for counseling, another one does not. And then you're stuck, because if you're only getting one side's perspective, how could you help them? Part of the reason the husband's stuck is because he only sees his perspective. You got to hear the other side's perspective. Someone who's willing to counsel with only hearing one side's perspective is it's questionable whether that person can really help much. A person has to know that whenever he's calling a shot, he cannot be gas libo bora. He can't be crass. A person has to be sensitive to the details, and that he has to verify and to know much, much more about the background information before he can give an opinion. We give judgments in our life. Sometimes we can tell a child or a spouse, I don't agree with you. You made a judgment call. Are you sure you don't agree with him? Or I don't agree with that you did that. Or why'd you do that? It's usually much better if you can ask a person why they did something and not express an opinion that you disagree. And that's a habit. It's a style a person can get into. Instead of coming down hard, a person can come down soft. And it's much more educational. Even if you're right, let's say everything's clear, but you'll get your point across much better if you say, if you think it through with the person, if you come in gently. Why would you say that? And why do you think it's worth doing that? And what do you think is going to happen if we do that? Let's take a simple case. Your wife hangs out the laundry. And the neighbor hangs out her freshly laundered, soaking sheets over your wife's laundry. And your wife's laundry was almost dry. Your neighbor just got it drenched. And this is not the first time and not the 10th time and not the 100th time that it's happening. Your wife just washed the windows. Your neighbor hangs out her wet sheets, just stains up all the windows your wife just washed. You're building your sukkah. And your neighbor is cleaning their floors. And here in Israel, you clean with a bucket of water and then you get all dirty water. And then they pour it out there. Out their funnel, and it starts pouring down not only on your head, but on all of your sukkah, and you're stuck building your sukkah, right? Okay, so these are things that happen between neighbors. There are a lot of good things that happen between neighbors, but there are also misunderstandings, and the problem is when it starts repeating itself. And after it happens the 200th or 300th time, you walk in through the door, and your wife is steaming, and she says, I'm going to go up there, and I'm going to... You guys could fill in the blanks, whatever she says. What do you say? Doesn't close you, though. Don't bother.
Don't say anything, and give them chocolate.
You're not going to win if you start disagreeing. And maybe she's right. Maybe she should give them a piece of her mind. And maybe there's another way to do it. Your first thought is, I know, they dripped on her laundry again. I know. But they did tell her that they have these hours and she has those hours, and she was supposed to hang it out in her hours and get it down by the time it was their hours, and she didn't bother doing that. So what's the thing you could say? Honey, it's their hours right now. It's the afternoon. You agreed with them that they get the second half of the day. Why didn't you take down laundry? It's not their fault. Oh, you called the shot, right? It's very natural to react that way. But did you really hear what time did they hang their laundry? You walk through the door at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You agree by 1 o'clock she has her laundry down. Mishnah says, don't be quick to judge. Hagas libo b'oraha. What would you lose by just asking a question? Did they hang out the laundry in their half of the day or our half of the day? Short question. And then she'll say, I know it was their half of the day, but couldn't they just warn me? They dripped all over my laundry. And then you're going to say what? Yeah, so you're going to go yelling at them because you forgot to take down the laundry? That's not fair either. Again, you can achieve the same end by asking questions, by going a much gentler route. And I think that the Mishnah is teaching us that a person should be slow to calling the shot, and not only be slow to calling the shot, be gentle in calling the shot. And these are habits a person can get into. In our male world, things are much more hardcore. You're right, you're wrong, and swallow it if you're wrong. There's nothing wrong, it's not personal. It doesn't work that way in marriage. You tell your spouse she's wrong, so it's personal. She is wrong. Okay, that doesn't matter. You shouldn't be the one telling her. You'll say, but 1 second, honey. You don't want to do something that's wrong. Right, I don't want to do something that's wrong, but I don't want you to tell me I'm wrong. So what do you want from me? I want you to say gently and lovingly and sweetly and kindly and softly. Yeah, so that's a habit that us men have to get into. It's not natural to us. The natural reaction of a husband is, it's 2 o'clock. You were supposed to have your laundry down by 1. What do you want from her? Right, that's what's fair. And if it were two men having this conversation, that would go over very well. Either I'm right or I'm wrong. If you're missing a fact, I'll tell you. If you're not missing a fact, I'll swallow it. But it doesn't work that way. Mishnah Ches, Hu Haya Omer. The same Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yossi, he used to say, Al Tihi Dan Yechidi. A person shouldn't judge alone. She'en Dan Yechidi Al Achad. Because there's only one who's entitled to judge alone, and that is the omniscient Hashem. He knows everything. He could judge alone. Ma'al tomar kabelu da'atin. Don't tell the other judges except my opinion. Shen rashin b'lo ata, because they're entitled, and if they differ from you, then they outnumber you, and they're entitled to have the opinion and not you, because you're outnumbered. So the Mishnah is talking to us about what's called a mumche, a person who is considered the professional judge. Chazal tell us that once a person has reached a certain level, so then you're allowed to take an individual and tell him, we want you to judge our case. And even though technically a person who's been appointed as Mumcheh L'Rabim, let's say they used to have fairs or markets, and they, at the market they had a judge that everyone agreed he would rule if there were disputes. The Mishnah advises us, although technically, halachically, you're allowed to do it, better take along other people. And if you've taken along other people, don't go telling them, well, I could have judged this without you. You know, they really wanted my opinion. I wanted other people here. Guys, accept what I say, because they're entitled to differ from you. One of the weaknesses we have is that we think we see things our own way. We don't even see that as a weakness. That's a double weakness. It's not only that we have that weakness, but we don't see it as a weakness. Every person has their blind spots, and every person has their approach to life, and that's an asset and a strength, but there are going to be situations where that's a weakness. The Talmud says, let's say a court was presiding, and in front of the court, a man walks in, grabs someone else, and kills him. And as the court is standing there watching, the court says, don't do it. It's biblically prohibited. And if you do it, you have two witnesses there. The witnesses say, if you do it, it's prohibited from this and this verse, and you get the death penalty. And the man says, I don't care, and does it. Okay. So all the technical details have been filled. And the court witnessed it. So can that court judge that case of murder? Halacha says no. You ask yourself, why? If they saw it themselves, isn't that even more powerful than hearing it from witnesses?
The witness can't be the judge.
So that's another discussion in Halacha. That's why I said there were two other witnesses present. But the Talmud tells us that in order to judge a case properly, you have to be able to see the positive side of the case. You have to be able to look at this case and say, well, maybe he didn't do it the way we think. Maybe the story isn't the way we think it is. And the court that just witnessed it, well, then let them go and testify before another court. But they can't judge the case because they'll never see a positive side to this case. They just saw it. They hate the guy. They see him as a vicious murderer. They might be right. Let them give all that information over to another court. But they themselves can't judge it because they will never be able to see another side to the case. Once they've seen it, that's it. They can't judge the case.
They're too close to the case,
if you say that. Oh. So that means sometimes it's not a question of clarity. We feel like we have tremendous clarity. And even so, the halacha says, yeah, you have clarity from your perspective. And there is an advantage to having others' perspective. I have a good friend who joined the family business 2 years ago. And I called to congratulate him. And he said, thank you, it's good, but it's bad. So I said, I understand what's good, but what's bad? He said, well, my father's in the head of the business, my brother's second in the business, and I'm also going to be in the business now. And we're all, that's great, we all work together, and I'm looking forward to starting with them, but we're all from the same family, which means we all share a perspective on life. We share a perspective on business. And that shared perspective means that we also share blind spots. And if we don't have a stranger in the business, then we're weaker. We're strong because we understand one another perfectly, but that also means we have shared weaknesses. And we need strangers in the business. We need someone who did not grow up in the same house, who does not see things the way we do. So sometimes it'll be difficult that he doesn't see it the way we do, but it's an asset that we lack. We can't be as successful if we're only limited to our family's perspective. As wonderful as we are, that's not good enough. It takes a certain humility, a certain modesty, to realize that I don't see everything. As much as I see, my view is limited. The Mishnah says, don't judge alone. Because there's only one who could really judge alone. Every one of us can benefit from hearing someone else's perspective. Now, if there's one area that's typically a hard area in marriage, it is this area. And we can begin by describing the effect, or we can begin by describing the cause. Let's describe the effect firstly. If you speak to the average couple, what you get to hear is the following. The husband, we'll start with the wife. The wife says, My husband never tells me the important things in his life. When he's talking to his mother on the phone or his best friend on the phone, I'll hear that he got a raise today. But he didn't think to tell me that when he came home. As he was talking to someone else, I heard that he switched offices. And he didn't think to tell me that. And as he was looking up online the different cars, I got to see that the new position is offering him a car he's going to have to choose too. And they didn't think he has to discuss that with me either. But that's just an example, the wife will tell you. He doesn't think, he doesn't talk to me that much about so many things. Okay? Most wives complain that their husband does not talk to them enough, does not share with them enough. Now let's go over to the husband. If you talk to the husband and he'll tell you, I talk to my wife about 2 to 3 hours a night. I come home every night and we talk. When she expressed to me that her dissatisfaction with the fact that we don't talk enough, so I took off more time. I do more work at work. I bring less work home. And I try my best to make her happy in our conversations. Now you present the wife with those facts and the wife will say, yes, but we're talking as we're doing a million other things. And that's the point we'll focus on tonight. But maybe we should focus on the first point too once we touched on it. Okay, we'll come back to that. And he doesn't share with me the important things in his life. So you ask the husband, well, why didn't you tell her you switched offices? And why didn't you tell her about the car? And why don't you share these things with her? So the husband will give you one of two replies, which we'll discuss in a minute. But first, I just want to come back to that first point. For us men, conversation works very well if it's by the way. I'm doing something, he's doing something, we're both in the same room, and as we're doing it, we're talking. For 2-3 hours, we've been talking. That's called conversation for us. That's fine. For women, it doesn't work that way. One of the first things I tell people when they get engaged is, you're going to go and look at beds together, and you're going to look at refrigerators together, and you're going to do a lot of practical things, look at apartments together. And from your perspective as a man, you've spent time together, you've spoken together. From her perspective, you didn't. From a woman's perspective, until you sit down and take out ice cream and talk about and say, now let's talk, you haven't spoken. If you're talking as you're doing other things, from a woman's perspective, that's not real conversation with the man. You want to talk, sit down and talk to me. Don't talk to me as we're doing other things. You'll say, but we spoke for 3 hours straight now. What do you mean? For 3 hours straight we were talking. That's not talking. If you take 5 minutes, you don't need more than 5 minutes. Take 5 minutes to sit down and say, let's talk. Now you've had conversation in the woman's book. So that's just, once we raise that point, it's worth mentioning. You ask the husband why he doesn't share these things with his wife, and classically the husband will give you two responses. Response number one is, anytime I try to tell her about what's going on, and he'll even sometimes be able to tell his wife, you remember I started telling you something interesting happened at work? She says, yeah, and what happened then? He says, well, then you asked me if that secretary changed her perm again. And I said, yes. And you said, how does it match with her earrings? And I said, I didn't notice. And you said, why don't you notice these things? And I said, because I'm a man. And you said, the whole conversation went off in a different direction. And then I tried a second time, and I said, and a second time you took the whole conversation in a whole different direction. So the first classical answer that men will give you is, I try sharing with her. But she takes the conversation in different directions. Anytime I try to tell her something, she has a million questions in all kinds of directions. I never get to the point that I want to tell her. And that's because men and women's conversational styles differ in this point. When women talk, the purpose is talk. We're connecting as we're talking. And so they can keep going off on tangents. And that's normal conversational style for them, and they're not offended by it. And so they also don't feel uncomfortable saying, oh, wait, but I wanted to tell you what happened today at work. And then they'll go back to the point, and everyone's happy with it. For a man, if you walk into a conversation and you say, I want to share with you what happened at work today, and your wife says, and that secretary, is she still with that funny perm in her hair? To your mind, that's it. She's not interested. She took the conversation in a different direction. Fine, I'll go that direction, but don't take that. I wanted to tell you. You'll try a second time, and it already feels bad on your ego, because is she really interested? If she's interested, why is she talking about other things? And by the third time, you've given up. That's it. It's over. That's male way of conversation. So you have to learn how to bridge that. One of the ways to bridge that is to say, I want to tell you something important happened in the office today, or you pique her curiosity. You say, there's something that's really going to interest you in the office today. And she'll go off on the perm, but believe me, she'll come back. Because you began with an introduction. Something very interesting happened today. But what you have to know is not to get offended by it. That's the way women talk. It's not that she's not interested. She is interested. The second major reason that most husbands don't share things with their wives is because of the reactions they get. A husband might say, last time I switched offices, you told me I was wrong in switching offices. And the wife will say, well, didn't you want my input? And he'll say, well, maybe. So there are two forces at play here. One is the male ego. I'm not always interested in hearing I was wrong. But two is much more subtle and much more important to my mind. And that is a very, very crucial difference between men's conversational styles and women's conversational styles. Let's take a discussion about a block. Let's say you're driving down a road and you're looking for an apartment to live in. And your wife says, I would never want to live on this block. To a man's mind, she doesn't want to live on this block. We'll turn. There's nothing to look for on this block. To a woman's mind, what she just said was, I want to discuss why I don't think that I would want to live on this block. I said it as a finite statement. I said I would never want to live on this block. I did not mean it as a finite statement. Totally different conversational styles. It's like when a man and a woman are having an argument. If the woman says, I hate you, what she means is, I'm very upset at you. When the man says, I hate you, he means, I hate you. We're different. We wouldn't say it if we didn't mean it. And so men are very often very upset when women say things. And then men say, they're very fickle, these women. They never make up their minds. She says, I never want to live on this block. I turn off the block. She says, why'd you turn? I said, you said you never wanted to live on this block. So what are we looking on this block for? She says, yeah, but I didn't mean it. Then why'd you say it? Now you understand that men and women could get into big disagreements and misunderstandings here. But what happens is, let's say, now let's take that to the story of the office. The husband says, I had to switch offices. And until now I had two male co-workers, and I had to choose between switching to an office with two female co-workers or 15 female co-workers. So I switched to the one with 15. And the wife says, gee, I wouldn't do that. I would have switched to the one with two. Now in the husband's mind, she just told me she disagrees with what I did. She doesn't even understand why I did it. To the husband's mind, well, the reason I switched to 15 is because I felt there was much less tsanua to be in a room with two. With two, just me and them. With 15, okay, we're all in a room. So they're all cackling. Okay, what can I do? I'm doing my work, they're doing theirs, and they're fine. You know, I'm... So they're talking all the time, but they're not talking to me. If there are two in the room, it's me and them. But she never asked. So in his mind, she already disagreed with me when she didn't ask. Why should I tell her next time I switch offices? But to her mind, she didn't mean to really say, I don't agree. She meant to start a conversation in the direction of, I don't think I would agree with that. Why did you do it? But you see, their conversational style is such that when they make statements, statements are more an expression of what they're feeling than an accurate description of what they think. It's two different things. They're talking feeling here. I once had a chassan come over to me and ask me if this is normal. He says, his kala called him up and said, I need you to go to the apartment. I opened a drawer and there were a million bugs there. So he comes to the apartment and he goes to the drawer she described and he opens it and he sees a bug. So he closes the drawer and he looks through all the other drawers in the house and he can't find another drawer. So he calls up his future mother-in-law and he says, Ma, I don't understand. You know, she said there was a drawer with a million bugs. I haven't found it yet. Do you know which drawer it is? So she says, well, I thought it was the drawer right next to the fridge. And he says, well, I opened that. There's one bug there. It's not that one. So his mother-in-law says, no, it's that one. So he says, but there's one bug there. She says, yeah, one bug, that's what she meant. He says, no, she said a million. Could you call her? Could you get her at work? She said a million. One bug isn't a million. What does a woman mean when she says there are a million bugs in the drawer? She means there's a bug, that there's something that's really bothering me. I didn't bother counting if it was one or ten or a million. To a husband, one bug is not a million. What's she calling me over one bug for? So he's calling there, arguing with his mother-in-law, and she's trying to explain to him that that one buck can be a million bucks. But this leads us back to our Mishnah. Men will often find themselves very, very frustrated because when they start having a conversation, the woman is very quick to express what he interprets as an opinion which disagrees with him. Whereas what the woman is really very often trying to say is, I'm thinking in the other direction than what you said. Could you explain to me what you were saying? But she doesn't express it the way a man would. Meaning a man might say, as they're driving down the block, I'm bothered by the noise on this block. I'm bothered by the high prices on this block. So I'm thinking that maybe we should reconsider buying a house on this block. A woman says, I'd never want to live on this block. So that's it. It's over. Man turns the steering wheel. As they say in Hebrew, he don't know no chachmes. That's what she said. Okay, that's it. But that's where we have to learn. It's not... when they're using finite terms, very often they're expressing an emotion. They're not expressing a finite thought. But then you come back to the situation where a husband very often is very frustrated because he feels like, I can't share with her what's going on by me for one of two reasons. Either because of what we just discussed, she's very quick to give me a ruling. She's very quick to have an opinion. And we just explained that that's a very common misunderstanding. Or because she veers the topic off topic and it feels like she's never interested in hearing what I have to say. I could spend 2 hours trying to get one idea across to her, but every time the topic veers somewhere else. So then let's remember the Mishnah. The Mishnah warns us that as smart as a person is, and even if he's been appointed by the public as the judge, he can benefit from another opinion. And in our life, one of the greatest assets that Hashem gives us is the capacity to have a spouse to bounce ideas off of, to disagree with us, to point out to us where we're wrong, to point out to us the things we haven't thought about. And so the Mishnah warns us, don't judge alone. There's only one who could judge alone. It is to our benefit, whether we like it or not. And very often, if we think about the points we discussed tonight, then we can grow to like and take advantage of that great asset that Hashem gave us, a partner for the journey of life.